Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Stone Chapel, a podcast of the staff and friends of the Lanier Theological Library in Houston, Texas. My name is David Capes. I'm the Senior Research Fellow at the Library and your host for this series of podcasts. Our purpose is fairly simple. We want to bring to you great conversations with leading experts from around the world on biblical, theological, historical, and archaeological themes. Well, the list goes on. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. It's an honor for me to welcome Dr. John Warwick Montgomery to our podcast today, the Stone Chapel Podcast. He has 11 degrees, and I think an honorary degree as well. His PhD comes from the University of Chicago. He has authored more than 50 books and hundreds of articles, most of which you can probably find here at the Lanier Theological Library. And if we don't have them, we're going to get them. I guarantee you that. Dr. Montgomery, it's great to see you. Welcome to our library.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you've been here a couple of days. You came from Strasbourg, France, where you live. Hopefully, you're done with the jet lag by now.
Well, not terribly, but I think I can survive.
You can keep going, huh? Well, tell me your impressions of the library. I know you probably have seen some of it, maybe not all of it, all the property. What's your initial impressions of this
place?
Well,
it's a magnificent private library, and it's so aesthetically maintained. The interior of it would make you think that you were in an Oxford college. And it's a pleasure to be in a library that actually looks like a library and doesn't look like the adjunct to a computer shop.
That's exactly right. We love books here. We think books are going to have a long shelf life with us.
Well, I attended a librarian's conference on one occasion, and a speaker argued that the current computerized attempts to replace books were a most unfortunate development. The reason being that those computer techniques constantly change, and as a result of that, the hardware has to be changed all the time, and very often it's impossible to play the earlier stuff after the hardware has been changed. And so his argument is that the most stable and permanent way for a library is books, because the books are not going to change.
Books are not going anywhere, are they, right? As long as they're well-maintained and
right
and such. It's a delight to have you here, though. Dr. Montgomery, our first question is always a hard one, and that question is, who is John Warwick Montgomery?
Oh, well, the person with that name should hardly be the person to answer that question.
But you're the expert in who John Warwick Montgomery is.
Well, but I might be a biased expert, right?
We assume so. We assume bias.
Yeah. Well, my qualifications are in law and in theology, principally. My activities as a Christian believer have been to use the principles of both law and theology, and principally history, to support Christian faith. And so I have found myself in the subfield of apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith.
We're not apologizing for being Christians.
Hardly. The Greek word apologia, which is used in the New Testament, means a defense, a defense. And so what the apologist tries to do is to offer the best evidence in behalf of Christian faith and endeavors to provide the most trenchant criticisms of theological and philosophical positions that contradict Christian faith. And I've discovered that since lawyers are more acquainted with the problems of evidence than theologians or philosophers, the law offers an excellent area for strengthening the defense of the faith.
Now, you've practiced law on more than one continent.
Right? Yes, I'm a member of the bar of several U.S. jurisdictions. I am also a barrister in England. In England, there are two classes of lawyers, the solicitors and the barristers. The barristers do the higher high court work and the litigation in the courts. They're the ones who wear the wigs.
Right? Ah, yes.
Uh-huh. The solicitors are family lawyers and concentrate on property matters, wills, successions, and the kind of case that can be handled in a county court.
Say. I see. Okay.
And in France, I am an avocat. And in France, there are two classes of lawyers also, the avocat and the notaire. The notaire are like the solicitors.
Okay.
All right.
All right. I do more family matters, property.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, wills and such.
And the avocat are the ones who fight the cases in the courts.
Hmm.
The major difference, actually, between those systems and the American system are that judges are separately trained in both of those countries.
Hmm.
So you are either a lawyer or a judge, or you're either a notaire or a judge, and you don't move from one to the other. Whereas in the United States, obviously, the lawyers, it's from a pool of lawyers from whom the judges are normally chosen.
Hmm.
And in Europe, there is no electing of judges. Judges are trained at institutions that allegedly guarantee their quality, and people are highly suspicious of the notion of electing somebody to the bench.
Yeah, yeah. It makes it a popularity contest, right?
Well, it can be that.
It can be that. It can be that. Now, you're here to lecture in a couple of days here at the library on a very interesting topic. Let me read the title, because it's a pretty interesting title. Why do unbelievers reject the solid evidences for Christian truth? And you're asking that as a theologian and from the standpoint of the law as well. Give us a little bit of a teaser, a couple of minutes maybe, about what you are going to be doing in that lecture, because we want people to go and hear that lecture on our website. They can go to www.laniertheologicallibrary.org and find that lecture. Is going to be videoed. We may have a transcript, I don't know, down the road a little bit. But could you just tell us what you're going to be talking about?
Yes. Well, in a sense, this lecture doesn't present the evidence for the faith. The lecture is what we might call meta-apologetic. That is, it asks questions that relate to the problem of the non-Christian once the evidence has been presented.
Mm.
Let's say that it's possible, and it is the case, that Christianity can offer evidence so powerful that any reasonable person ought to become a Christian. All right? Now, we're not saying that Christianity is a kind of machine and you can toss the unbeliever into the machine and grind a crank and a believer comes out the other end. It doesn't work that way.
No,
but
no.
The fact of the matter is that Christianity, unlike any other world religion, can offer solid, objective evidence for the truth of its claims. This evidence, of course, focuses on the history of Jesus Christ, the fact that his life is a historical fact, that you can argue in the same way for the historicity of the events of that life, such as the resurrection. And if he predicts his resurrection and claims to be God Almighty, and he rises again from the dead, then this is the best reason for accepting his claim.
Mm.
I mean, presumably he would know more about it than anybody else, since
Absolutely.
He's the only one who's managed that. And so you, if you accept his claims, then among those claims is the way of salvation. He tells you that only through him can one be saved. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me, said he. And his early disciples preached there is none other name under heaven by which we must be saved than the name of Jesus Christ. And he also puts an absolute stamp of approval on the Old Testament,
exactly.
So that this gives you reason for accepting everything in the Old Testament. And so what you have here is a Bible with solid historical documents in the New Testament and an Old Testament that Jesus has placed his stamp of approval upon. Now, in light of all of that, clearly a non-Christian ought to move in that direction. I mean, contrast the situation with other religions. Take Islam, for example. In Islam, the only miracle that is given, and it's not in the Quran, it's in Muslim tradition concerning Muhammad, is his night journey. He went from Mecca to Medina instantaneously on a supernatural steed. He went so fast that no one was able to see it. Now, in philosophy, there is the concept of technical meaninglessness. As Wolfgang Pauli, the physicist, wrote in the margin of a colleague's paper, this isn't right. It isn't even wrong. I mean, it's possible to be worse than wrong. It's possible to state things that can't be tested one way or the other in any fashion whatever. And if you look at the world's religions other than Christianity, that is exactly the situation. They are technically meaningless. If you believe them, you believe them because you think they'll make you feel good. But unfortunately, the cosmos is a lot more complex than that, and it wouldn't be a bad idea if you found out how to take care of the fact that you are a wretched, self-centered sinner. And Jesus tells you that he has handled that on the cross through his death for our sins. But you've got to believe this, for goodness sake, in order to benefit from it. You know, if somebody gives you a check and you don't believe that he's got any money in the bank account and you never cash the check, even though the check is exceedingly valuable, it's going to do you absolutely no good.
You got to cash the check.
You got to cash the check. And so I have been in the area of apologetics, but I am very much concerned with cases where the non-Christian hears this evidence and sees it and recognizes that it's better than the evidence that he accepts in other situations in ordinary life. And yet he will not become a Christian. Why does he reject good evidence? So the lecture that I'm presenting at Lanier deals with explanations as to why this is the case and suggestions as to what to do when you come across that sort of thing.
Well, there are people that I know that reject the Christian faith often because not so much reason and whether it's true or not, but there's some kind of an emotional, that they've been injured in some way.
Sure.
They feel like, you know, the church has hurt them in some way. Does that figure into some of what you're thinking about here? Or is that just
Yes. Yeah. One of the major reasons is that that it's often presented is that they have been badly treated by Christians, or they've experienced unpleasant situations within a Christian context.
Right.
But of course, that shouldn't have anything to do with the truth question at all.
Whether it's true or not, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, let's say, for example, Einstein steps on your foot and really hurts you. That shouldn't have anything to do with whether E equals MC squared or not. I mean, it's unfortunate, and he should have been much nicer and more careful.
Didn't apologize or whatever.
Exactly. But but it, that is his problem. It isn't your problem. Your problem is to get at the truth as best you can.
Right.
And that's going to depend upon the evidence and not upon the person who presents the evidence.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing the lecture. Once again, the title of the lecture, Why Do Unbelievers Reject the Solid Evidences for Christian Truth? You'll be able to find that lecture on our website, www.laneertheologicallibrary.org. Make sure you hear that, the whole lecture, not just the teaser that we just heard.
Well, and the lecture uses examples from the law because there is a parallel question in the law. It is, why do clients reject the good advice of their counsel, of their attorney? Huh? You have lots of instances where an attorney is terribly frustrated because he gives a clear picture of what legal consequences are going to follow from a particular decision, and his client will not follow that advice. Now, in the law, there have been some studies done recently on why clients do this, and in my lecture, I apply those analyses to the issue of why people reject the gospel, even though the evidence is overwhelming for it.
Gotcha. That's going to be fascinating. I'm looking forward to that. Now, very quickly, because we're running out of time, you're the director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. So what's the mission for that organization?
Well, we have intense study sessions in apologetics each summer for 2 weeks in Strasbourg, France.
A great setting.
A great city, the French Rhineland.
Yes.
The cost of this, by the way, is not as much as 2 weeks in Hawaii. And in Hawaii, all that will happen is that you'll get a terrible sunburn.
That's right.
Yes,
that's
right. But in this program, you will be studying under four great apologists. And the result of this is that you will learn what the most significant arguments against the faith are in our time at this moment, mm-hmm. and what the best responses are to those arguments. There is also a strong social program, and it is limited to only 20 participants each summer.
How do people find out if they wanted to participate in that? How would they do that?
Okay, the best way to do that is to go to the website of the Academy. Mm-hmm. And the website is www.apologeticsacademy.com. All is one word. That's apologetics with an S on it, APOLEGITICSACADEMY, apologeticsacademy.eu. EU stands for Europe.
Europe, okay.
Okay?
All right.
And this is an excellent website, gives all the details, and we have not been able to have this program for 2 years because of COVID, mm-hmm. but we're having it this coming year, and we have had to move people from the 2019 program on to the one that's taking place this time.
In 2022.
Right. And so there are just a few places left because of cancellations of people who simply couldn't move 2 years later to take part in it. So if there are listeners who are interested in this, then they certainly should right away look at that website and contact us by email. The email addresses are given there.
Okay.
The situation is that if a person put down the deposit of only $300 in order to be sure they could come this next July, mm-hmm. it's always the middle 2 weeks of July, then they will automatically be on the list for the following year.
Okay, it's like season tickets to baseball in a way.
Is it? My knowledge of baseball is minimal.
So, well, I'm a big baseball fan.
If
you put the
so that's how it's done in baseball.
That's how, in a way, if you want season ticket, if you get season tickets now, you're sort of guaranteed a place next year.
Ah,
yeah. So
well,
the same sort of, and I think they probably other.
But you know, you learn something new every day, and here I am learning that.
Well, we should go to a game together, and we could talk a little bit about that. Well, that sounds fascinating.
Strasbourg is a wonderful city because it's on the border between France and Germany, and it's one of the great cities of the Protestant Reformation, therefore we are able to introduce you to a lot of Reformation understanding, and you're able to visit, for example, we go to Colmar. Colmar is a large city to the south of Strasbourg, and there in Colmar is the Unterlinden Museum, and that museum has the most marvelous painting of the crucifixion that has ever been done. This is the Grunewald altarpiece. And this has been reproduced.
I think I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's been reproduced widely. But it has the entire altarpiece, including his painting of the resurrection. And it's difficult to describe the impact, but these are just amazing. And that's just one example of the kind of and we go to Albert Schweitzer's birthplace in a little village in the Alsace, and I give a lecture on Schweitzer, this lecture, of course, praises him as a great humanitarian,
right,
but goes to work on his theology.
is some of his work on the historical Jesus.
Exactly.
Is a bit of an issue.
Yes.
Well, we are just delighted that you are here at our library, and we hope the lecture goes very well. I'm sure it will. And we look forward to just continuing the conversation of what's going on with our library and with your work there in Strasbourg, France.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being with us today. Thanks to Brent Johnson and Janet Seifert for editing these podcasts. Thanks as well to Phil Keggy for our music. These podcasts are made possible by the generosity of Mark and Becky Lanier and the Lanier Theological Library Foundation. If you have questions, comments, or would just like to be in touch, please email us at podcast@lanierlibrary.org. Lanier is LANIER. Thanks for listening.